Well, if you have a Bible, we are going to be back in the Gospel of Matthew. It's a new year, but it's the same gospel book that we're going through. And so we're going to be in Matthew chapter 13, and we're going to cover verses 1 through 23 this morning. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn there. We'll read that in a second. And if you're using the Pew Bible in front of you, that is going to be on page 818. And we'll read that in just a second. But as we come to Matthew 13, we're coming to the third discourse in Matthew's gospel. So if you've been with us, you've hopefully gotten the pattern that the gospel of Matthew is patterned around narrative and discourse, and narrative and discourse. And so we saw the Sermon on the Mount, which was this first discourse, probably the most well-known. But then there's a section of narrative, and then there's Jesus sending out the 12, and that's the second discourse. Well, we've just come through chapters 11 and 12, which was narrative, and we're coming to a third discourse. And all of chapter 13 is Jesus' teaching in the form of parables. And so all of chapter 13, I think there's seven that we'll cover, depending on how you break it down, but there's a host of parables that we're going to be running through these in the coming weeks. And all of the parables are focused on life in the kingdom. And so this morning, we're going to look at the first parable. And we're going to get the parable and the explanation of the parable, but sandwiched in between those two sections, we're going to see Jesus explaining to his disciples why he speaks in parables. And so it's helpful for us at the beginning. I think Matthew has put this parable at the beginning of chapter 13 because this helps set the context for the rest of chapter 13 and why he is, in fact, teaching in parables. But coming to 13, one thing just to recognize in understanding the teaching that's going to happen in chapter 13 is if you were with us, you remember in chapters 11 and 12, those chapters are marked by rising opposition to Jesus. And so the tension is rising. So we saw in chapter 11, there's these cities who refuse to repent and believe at the miracles that Jesus did. And so he's saying, "Woe to you, cities." And so there's these cities that are rejecting him, but then these religious leaders who refuse to acknowledge or believe what they're seeing before their eyes and hearing and believing what Jesus is saying about himself. And so these religious leaders are like these unbelieving cities in refusing not only to believe what Jesus says, but refusing to recognize the significance of the works that are being done before their very eyes. In fact, in the case of the religious leaders, they sought to attribute the miraculous work of Jesus, the Son of God, in bringing the kingdom to Satan and the demonic activity. And so these religious leaders are part of this rising tension between Jesus and his followers and those who oppose him. And the religious leaders even seek to destroy him. They can't stand him. And so we had those two, but then even the end of chapter 12, there's a surprising interaction between Jesus and those we wouldn't think would be opposed to him, but he defines them as opposed to him, and it's his own family, it's his blood family, his mother and his brothers. And we see Jesus defining them as against him because he says, "Those who are following me are my mother and brother, not those outside asking for me." And so Matthew is dividing the hearers, the receivers of this message, of the life and ministry of Jesus, into two groups, and there's those who are opposed and those who are with him. And this kingdom message, Matthew wants us to know, it's a dividing message. And there's only two categories. There's no neutrality. There's no middle ground. Either you hear the message and you believe and respond and understand, or you refuse to believe and you do not understand and you do nothing with it. Right, those are the two options. You either hear and come and follow, or you refuse and you don't do anything. And you continue in your rejection and unbelief. And so Matthew is going to great lengths to show that the words and works, the ministry of Jesus, his life, his person is divisive. And there's only two options. And it's important to realize as we come into chapter 13 because this division is what shapes our passage. And not only our passage, it's what shapes the reason. It helps us understand why Jesus is even using parables. And what we're going to see as we read and study these verses is that the determining factor as to whether you're inside or outside is how you perceive, how you understand what's taking place in Galilee, in the surrounding areas, in the person and work of Jesus. How you respond to him is going to determine whether you're in or out. He is the key, as we'll see. Let me read the passage, and then we'll work through the verses together. But Matthew chapter 13, I'm going to read beginning in verse 1 through verse 23, so you can follow along as I read. Matthew chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. That same day, Jesus went out of the house, and he sat beside the sea. And great crowds gathered about him so that he got into a boat and he sat down. And the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path. And the birds came and they devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil. And immediately they sprang up since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. And other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear. Verse 10, then the disciples came to Jesus and said, why do you speak to them in parables? And Jesus answered them, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, quote, you will indeed hear but never understand, and you will indeed see but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are you. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see, and did not see it. And long to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arises on account of this word, immediately he falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. And as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields, in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. Let me pray for us as we continue. Father, as we sit here in this room, we are experiencing the reality behind this parable, that the message of the gospel, the word from you, is going forth, and I pray that it would prove effective and fruitful. So I pray for hearers with hearts of good soil. I pray for effective hearing among your people here this morning. That's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Well, the outline's going to be a bit different. So because like there's the parable, then there's the explanation, then there's the explanation of the parable. We're going to work through these in a disorderly fashion, an orderly disorderly fashion, if you will. So we're going to start with the purpose of the parables that Jesus gives in verses 10 through 17. So we'll see the purpose of parables. And then we'll go back to verse 1 through 9 and see the parable of the sowers, and then follow that with the parable of the sowers explained. So Jesus' explanation of this parable of the sower that the passage ends with. So first point, the parable, the purpose of parables, and the parable, then the parable explained. And so we start there with verses 10 through 17. And we start here because not only do they explain that the reason for the first parable here in chapter 13, but they explain what's going to come all through chapter 13. It gives the perspective on why he's teaching in parables. And so it sets the stage. So we're starting with this first section. And so look there at verse 10. The disciples, after hearing this parable, they come to him and they say, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And so right away, notice what the disciples are asking. They're asking, "Why do you speak to them?" You see the them, not why do you speak to all of us, but why do you speak to them in parables? Not the 12, not those following Jesus, but to the crowds. They want to know, why do you speak to them in parables? And we can assume that this question is asked because the crowds, probably those standing on the beach who Jesus tells this parable, they are probably visibly confused, scratching their head. What in the world is this guy talking about? And so the disciples come to Jesus to ask this question because they don't understand why Jesus would teach in a way that didn't lead to clear understanding. Hey, you're a teacher who's come to explain the coming of the kingdom. Why are people confused? I mean, if I'm up here preaching and I see a crowd filled with confused people, now every week I see a couple, but if you're all confused, I ought to ask, well, what am I doing wrong? Right? So they're asking, why is everyone confused? Jesus, why are you talking this way? And notice how he responds in verse 11. To you, again, here's the division. To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. And so Jesus is functioning with this division in mind. He's continuing to function. The disciples, those who are following him, the 12, and those who've committed to him, it's been given, he says, to know the secrets of the kingdom. If you have the NIV, the translation is, because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. And so as Jesus begins to answer the question, he identifies the disciples, those who are following him, as those who have received or been given the secrets of the kingdom, while identifying those outside, the crowds, those hearing the parables, as those who have not received, who have not been given the secrets of the kingdom. And as Jesus is answering this question, he's furthering the divide between those who hear and understand versus those who hear and don't understand. Right? That's what he's doing here. He continues verse 12. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Here's the answer, verse 13. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And so I think as we think through this response, I think this is a pretty straightforward answer to the question. Let me explain. The reason that Jesus speaks in parables, according to verse 13, is because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And I say it's a pretty straightforward answer because if we understand the division that shapes the entire chapter, it makes sense. Those who have been given the secrets will continue to learn and benefit from the teaching of Jesus. So not really parables to them, it's just teachings from Jesus to them. They get it. And they hear, and they do, and they respond. But the ones who don't get it, they don't understand. They're going to continue to hear and see, but they're never going to get it. They're always going to remain outside. And so I think we can kind of formulate, Jesus teaches in parables for two reasons: to encourage the one who understands the nature of the kingdom, who's committed to following him, and to confound and continue to confound those who don't understand, those who rejected him. And I'll say more about that, but look at verse 14 and 15. Jesus compares the current situation to a situation that the prophet Isaiah had experienced. So this is a quotation, and Matthew quotes a significant portion of Isaiah chapter 6 here to explain what's happening. So look at verse 14. Indeed, he's talking to the disciples again. In their case, again, those outside, those who don't understand, in their case, he says, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled. That says, you will hear indeed, but never understand. And you will indeed see, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and with their eyes they've closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. And so Jesus is quoting from Isaiah chapter 6. Now we know Isaiah chapter 6 because this is the vision of the king and his temple, and all the glory filled the temple. Right, that's Isaiah 6 at the beginning, in the year King Uzziah died. But this is later in Isaiah's commission, and he says, "Hear my, send me." But the Lord tells Isaiah, "You're going to go say this to the people. Hey, people, hey, Israelites, hey, God's people, you're going to hear but never get it. You're going to see but never perceive. For your hearts are dull. And with your ears, you can barely hear. And with your eyes, you're closing them. You're not getting what I'm going to say. Lest you should see and hear and understand, and then God would turn and heal you. Now, if you know anything about the Israelites during the time of Isaiah, they were not a faithful people. They're rebellious, disobedient, unfaithful people. And Isaiah was called to preach to the unfaithful people, knowing they were not going to respond. And his preaching, his message, his prophecies, that didn't make the people unbelieving. His preaching, his prophecy, his message confirmed the unbelief that was already there. The people in Isaiah's time had made up their mind regarding the Lord and his prophet. They were hard-hearted and rebellious. And the ministry of the prophet Isaiah revealed the hard-heartedness of the people. They didn't care what the Lord said to them through the prophet. They didn't care that it was the word of the Lord coming to them through Isaiah. They'd made up their mind. They didn't need the Lord. And Jesus here in Matthew 13 is comparing those outside, those who are refusing and rejecting him, to the unfaithful Israelites of Isaiah's time. Which helps us, I think, understand that Jesus' parables, they're not intended to confuse, but rather to confirm the confusion of those who have refused and rejected him. His parables highlight the clear unbelief that's already present among those who are opposing him. And so think about the religious leader who's seeking a way to destroy him. When he hears the parables, he doesn't care about that. He's made up his mind about Jesus. He doesn't have any concern about what Jesus says. Although the people heard the words, they didn't understand them and didn't want to understand them. That was the fault of the people in Isaiah's day, and Jesus is saying it was the fault of the people in his day. And so for those on the outside who have opposed and rejected Jesus, the confusion created by the parables serves as confirmation of their refusal to accept the divine direction that's come through the person and work of Jesus. They're not blessed. They remain outside, not part of the kingdom, because they've rejected the one who's brought the kingdom. And they're going to remain outside the kingdom so long as they refuse to accept Jesus as the king who'd come. And so that's why he's preaching and teaching in parables. Verse 16, but, again, going back to his disciples, blessed are your eyes, for they see. And blessed are your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and many righteous people of old, he's talking about the Old Testament, the prophets and the righteous people of the Old Covenant, they longed to see, disciples, what you are actually seeing right now, and they didn't see it. And they longed to hear the message of God through the promised Messiah, and they did not hear it. But you, disciples, you are hearing it. He wants them to know you have a privileged position in the unfolding plan of God and his salvation. Blessed are your ears and your eyes, he's saying, because you get it. You're with me. Whereas those outside are seen as a fulfillment of what Isaiah saw, the same is not true for these disciples. They are blessed. And they're blessed because their eyes see and their ears hear. And so Jesus says in verse 17, what they are seeing, what they're experiencing is what many longed to see and experience. And we have to recognize that the people of old, the prophets and the righteous people, they didn't not see and hear because they were dull in sight and sound. They didn't see it because they weren't alive at the time of the revelation of the king and his kingdom. And so Jesus wants these disciples to know you are seeing it unfold before your eyes, and it's not lost on you. Your eyes are seeing what God is doing in your midst, and your ears are hearing the message of the kingdom. God is on the move in the person and work of Jesus. The kingdom has come. The salvation promised from old was coming to pass before their very eyes, and they saw it and recognized it and understood it. Thus, we see that the purpose of the parables was to continue to confirm the stance of the hearers. The use of parables continued the divide between those who followed Jesus and those who rejected him. And so the use of parables and how one received the parables revealed where they stood in relation to the identity of Jesus and the person and work of Jesus. The issue wasn't primarily whether you understood the parable. The issue was what you had believed about the one telling the parable. Which we'll look in just a second at the parable and the explanation. But I just want to highlight here, as we close this first section, two themes at work here. And the first theme is God's prerogative. We see God's prerogative here. The first theme that helps us make sense of this division that's accompanying the ministry and teaching of Jesus is God's role in granting understanding. Look there at verse 11. Look at verse 11. I just want you to see this. They ask, why do you speak to them in parables? Jesus answers them, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. What's the difference between the disciples and those outside? To you it has what? Been given. That's a passive verb. You've received something. It's been given. And what's the question? What have they been given? The secrets to the kingdom of heaven. And the question that is implied is, or that we have to ask, is who is doing the giving? What does he mean, to you it's been given? Who's given what? Okay, you've been given the secrets, but who does the giving? Who's given the secrets of the kingdom to the disciples while not giving it to those outside? They haven't been given it, but you have. And the only answer to make sense of verse 11 is that God is the one who's given to them, but not given to them. God has given. It's his prerogative. God has given. God must always be the giver. When God doesn't give, there's no benefit. There's no blessing. So he says, God's given you the secrets, the understanding. I mean, as one commentator explains, the doctrine of election lies behind these words. It is not a merit in the disciples that they understand what others do not. Their comprehension is due to the fact that God has chosen them and given them the gift of understanding. Jesus is making very clear here, as the division between those who are with Jesus and those who oppose Jesus, as it heightens, Jesus is making the point that what makes the disciples differ is not anything in them. It's not any special gifting in and of themselves. It's not a pride-inducing truth. Hey, you guys are just really smart. Or hey, you guys got the magic ticket, so you get in. That's not the point. It's quite the opposite. God has given you this understanding. And so God must give understanding. That's the first theme at work, God's prerogative. But the second thing at work, and a related theme, is the centrality of Jesus. We see in these verses that Jesus is the key. I don't want to be overly simplistic, but the clear point of this section, I mean the clear point of the Gospel of Matthew thus far, is that Jesus is the key. It's all about him. He's the one who's fulfilled every Old Testament promise and prophecy. And as this division continues, the division is between those who follow Jesus and those who reject him. The division is between those who recognize what's happening in their very midst and those who don't recognize what's happening. Those who see and hear and understand do so not only because God has given them understanding, yes, that's true, but it's also simply because they recognize who Jesus is. The secrets of the kingdom, it's not some mysterious, hard-to-understand, complicated, esoteric truths. The secrets of the kingdom have everything to do with understanding and recognizing the one who has come as king. And Jesus is that one. He's the key. He's the dividing line. To follow him, to trust him, to recognize him as the crucial player in the unfolding of God's divine plan is to see and hear and be blessed. It's to be on the inside. Because when you recognize who he is, you follow him. Whereas to ignore him, to deny him and his role in God's unfolding plan, to attribute his miraculous work to Satan and his demons, to refuse to come to him who bids you to come, while in his very midst, is to hear and not understand, to see and not perceive. Because if you saw and understood, you would come to him and recognize the reality of who he is. Jesus is the key. It's precisely because the disciples had accepted the revelation that Jesus was the Messiah who would bring the kingdom that they were able to understand and respond to the teaching in the parable. So to them, it's not confusing. They look to Jesus. What does this mean? Tell us. Explain it to us. We're looking to you. Which is why to the one who doesn't see Jesus as the king, who's come to establish the kingdom like the Pharisees and others, to them, the parables make no sense. What in the world are you talking about? A sower in fields? What do you mean? Commitment to Jesus is the prerequisite for a true understanding of his parables. Or to put it another way, if people rejected Christ and set themselves in opposition to God, how could they understand the teaching that came from God through Christ? It's not possible. You can't do it. I mean, an illustration, maybe this is helpful, maybe it's not. But I remember as a kid, when I would go through the mall, so Patrick Henry Mall was a thing back then. I know malls are kind of on a decline now, but I go to Patrick Henry Mall and they had those little kiosks in the middle. And one of the kiosks was the Magic Eye kiosk. Maybe you guys remember that. Where they have that picture. And I'd walk by and I'd see people just staring at the pictures and talking about what they see. And I'm like, okay, let me see. And so I walk in and I look at this Magic Eye picture. And I see nothing. I just see shapes and colors. I'm like, this makes no sense. What are these people looking at? I'd stare and I'd stare and I'd see nothing, thinking, those people are crazy. It wasn't until later as I got older, someone explained, well, you have to cross your eyes, then slowly uncross them. I'm like, okay, I'll try that. And you do that, and after a couple times, I'm starting to see stuff. And so then you're like, oh, that's the key. And so then now I can't look at a magic eye without getting it. I know the key. I know the solution. And so after I knew that and the way to see it and understand it, I was never confused again by a magic eye picture. I could see. I could understand. I knew the key, the secret. I think that's the point of Jesus and the kingdom. If you don't know that Jesus is king, that he's been sent from God to establish the kingdom, then you're just going to be confused. Listen to some teachings. The centrality of Jesus is the key to understanding. Not just his parables, but his entire life and ministry, which highlights the tension between these two themes. God has to give understanding. Well, at the same time, the individual must make up their mind about Jesus. Both are true. You must decide Jesus is who he says he was, and God must give you understanding. These are two truths that must be held in tension, which is why we don't make election the issue. We make Jesus the issue. Knowing, trusting, praying that God must give understanding. Praying that eyes will be open, that ears will be open, that Jesus will be understood as he truly is. And so if you're praying for a lost family member, you don't say, Lord, I pray that they would be part of the elect. That's ridiculous. You pray that they would see the beauties of Jesus and trust in him, because he is the point. Let's look at the parable quickly. Second point in the parable, verses 1 through 9. It's that same day. So the setting is set. Jesus goes out of the house. He sits beside the sea. The great crowds come. And so he gets into the boat to get away from them so he can address all of them. So the whole crowd's on the beach, Jesus in the water, in the boat. And so he starts teaching in parables. In fact, in verse 34 of this chapter, Matthew tells us that all he said to the crowds from this point on is in parables. So this is kind of like a change in strategy. There's been enough time for people to make up their minds. Now Jesus is just dealing with the crowds in parables. But verse 3, he tells them this parable saying, a sower goes out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path. The birds come and devour it. Other seed falls on rocky ground. They didn't have much soil. Immediately it sprang up. Since there's no depth of soil, when the sun rose, it was scorched and withered away. Verse 7, other seed fell amongst thorns. These thorns grew up and choked them. Verse 8, other seed fell on good soil and produced grain, some hundredfold, 60-fold, 30-fold. So that's the parable. And he closes it with verse 9, he who has ears, let him hear. And so the parable, it's a call to listen, to hear, to understand. And so the title of the parable, it's known as the parable of the sower, but the sower isn't the focus here. The focus is on the soil, the one who receives the seed. The call is to listen, to hear, to understand. The call would be good soil, which we'll come back to, but notice the big picture of the parable. It's an agricultural picture. The sower wants to grow some grain, and so he goes out and just starts scattering seed indiscriminately all over the ground. And so it falls where it does. And so some, we're told, falls on this path. And so at that time, they didn't have highways or interstates. They had paths that just went through land, went through fields. And so there's a hard trodden path, and some of the seed, not intentionally, but it falls there. He's just scattering seed. Some falls on this path. It's walked by everyone. It's rock hard. There's no way for seed to get in. And so the birds come and they eat it. So the seed's gone. That's some of the seed. Some of the seed falls on rocky ground where it takes root in the soil. But the soil isn't deep. So it sprouts immediately. and show signs of promise, and the sower would be really encouraged. Oh my goodness, look, it's taking root and it's growing. But then the sun comes up and scorches the plant. There's no root. It can't sustain the hard times, and it withers away. It's gone. Another seed, he says, falls among thorns. It has no problem growing. Issue isn't growing. There's depth of soil. The issue is what grows alongside of it. There's thorns, and the thorns are growing right alongside of it, and the thorns overwhelm and choke out the seed. Though there's good soil, the thorns choke it out. And then lastly, verse 8, that some seed falls into good soil. So it's got plenty of depth. There's no thorns, and it grows. It produces grain, increasing, yielding 30-fold or 60-fold or 100-fold. It's productive soil. And this last soil, it produces different amounts, but the point isn't so much the amount. The point is that it produces soil. Grain grew from this good soil. And so it's a straightforward parable, but what does it mean? Let's jump to verses 18 through 23. The parable explains. So Jesus explains what it means. And as we seek to understand what Jesus means, let me just ask you a hypothetical or rhetorical question. How many types of soil does Jesus describe here? In this parable, how many types of soil would you say there are? You don't have to answer out loud. Just think. My assumption is that you'd probably say there's four types of soil. There's the path, there's the rocky ground, there's the thorns, and then there's the good soil. Now, technically that's true. There are four types that he describes. But I think in understanding what Jesus says here, in the context of Matthew, we don't need to focus so much on the four separate types of soil. Instead, I really think the point is that there's really two types of soil. Two types of soil would be unproductive soil, example one, example two, example three. Productive soil, example four, with example one, two, and three in it. The first three types of soil are all soil that would fall into the category of unproductive. None of them serve as good, long-lasting, productive soil. Yeah, there's some variation, but at the end of the day, all three of these, the path, the rocky ground, and the thorny ground, fail to produce lasting fruit. They're unproductive. Whereas this last soil, the good soil, it's the soil that produces lasting fruit. And within this productive soil, there are three types. There's 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold. And so I think Jesus, in telling this parable, there's two types of soil, and there's only two types. And in light of Matthew's context of this gospel story, there's only two types of hearers. There's two types of people listening to Jesus and his message. There's those who understand and produce fruit and respond, and there's those who don't understand. There's those who see and hear, and there's those who don't see and don't hear, those seeing and hearing. There's those who follow Jesus and pledge their allegiance to him, and those who don't follow Jesus and couldn't care less about following him. And I think that's the point. Those who hear and understand, those on the inside, whether it's disciples or those following, those who believe that he is who he says he is, they are the productive soul because their lives are bearing fruit. They've left all, they've forsaken all to follow him. Their lives are producing. The seed has produced. In following Jesus and in believing him and trusting him and in heeding his call to come, they've shown that they have the key to understanding. They're not going to go anywhere else. Where else are they going to go? Who else has the words of eternal life but this one? And so these people listen to Jesus as the promised one who's come to establish the kingdom. They hear and understand. Well, those who don't understand, those on the outside, the scribes, the Pharisees, his immediate family members, they're unproductive soil. They hear, but they don't understand. They see, but they don't perceive. The activity that's happening before them, God's action is lost on them. They don't see it. They're blind and deaf, though they have eyes and ears. This message of the kingdom, even when spoken by the king himself, leads to ground being just as barren as it was before Jesus came. It's unproductive soil. Now, while the main point is this productive versus unproductive, Jesus does describe different types of unproductive soil. And I don't think we have to press these details too hard, but there are different types of unproductive soil. And I think he gives diversity within this category of unproductive soil because if you think about the context of his life and ministry, as you think about those who are following him, those the crowds and what was coming ahead of him, there's going to be numerous responses to him and his message. And not every single person is like the Pharisee who wants to kill him. There's some who follow him and seem to say, we're all in. But then something happens and say, well, we're out of here. There's going to be varied responses of those who are unproductive soil, those who appear to show fruit but then fall away. And in the explanation of the parable, Jesus is giving reasons behind these varied responses, specifically the response of those who don't persevere in following him, those who don't persevere and bear fruit. And so whether it's the seed that's sown and that falls along the hardened path, which doesn't penetrate the heart, that's snatched away immediately, whether it's the seed that's immediately received and shows signs of promise only to fall away at the sign of trouble, whether it's seed that's sown among thorns, which never bears fruit because of the cares of the world or the deceitfulness of riches. In all these cases, through diverse circumstances, at the end of the day, the seed sown in all these soils leaves no trace of the seed. The sowing of the seed makes no difference in these unproductive soils. And so I just want to leave with two final points of application. And these two applications, the first point is simply this. There's a lesson here for the sower. A lesson for the sower. I mean, in one sense, we could walk away from this parable with nothing to do. And I think that would be a partially correct understanding. Now, so part of the purpose of this parable is to explain what's happening. This parable in some ways serves simply as an explanation of what's going on in the ministry of Jesus, which we could extend and apply to us here now in the sowing of the word, the message of the gospel, as those who sow the seed. We could apply the description of what happens to us. So there is a lesson for the sower. And the lesson for the sower would simply be to recognize that the sower doesn't determine the fruitfulness or effectiveness of the soil. The sower doesn't determine the effectiveness of the message taking root in the lives of the hearers or the soil. And so the lesson for the sower is to recognize that as messengers of the gospel, as disciples of Jesus, the call for you and for me, if you're a follower of Christ, is simply to sow. Sow the seed. And sow the seed. And sow the seed. That's the call. Sow the seed. We've received the word. We sow the word. I mean, what would it look like for you and for me to understand our role as followers of Christ to freely sow the seed of the gospel to all people, knowing that there were going to be varied responses? What would it look like to understand the certainty of not only productive soil sometimes, but also the certainty of unproductive soil? I mean, what would that look like? I'm afraid that too often for me, my hesitancy to sow seed, to share the gospel, to tell others about Jesus, is driven by a fear that they may not want to hear. It may not be good soil. It may not work for them, and it may not produce what I want it to produce. But here we have Jesus very clearly teaching and assuming that there are always going to be people in whom which the seed doesn't take root. There's always going to be hearers in whom the sowed seed doesn't produce, which means that when the potential of unproductive soil prevents me from sharing the gospel, the result is no seed sown, which is the opposite result that this parable ought to produce. Because the parable for the sower, the parable ought to produce in us a freedom to sow the seed. Not afraid if it's going to produce or not. That's not my job. What it ought to produce in me is a freedom to share the gospel, to indiscriminately proclaim the message of the King and the kingdom. J.C. Ryle said this. There's just a great summary. He says, the sower cannot give life. He can scatter the seed, but cannot command it to grow. He may offer the word of truth to people, but he cannot make them receive it and bear fruit. To give life is God's sovereign prerogative. God alone can give the increase. Isn't that freeing? Isn't that freeing to know? Be encouraged. Don't be dismayed by the lack of fruit in your seed sowing. Persist in sowing. That's the call. Persist in sowing. Also, don't be discouraged by slow growth. Seeds don't produce overnight. It takes time. So persevere and persist. Maybe you have a child, a wayward child. Persist in sowing the seed. So it's a lesson for the sower. But we also see a lesson for the soil. Well, there's application for the sower. The focus of the parable, as I said earlier, is on the soil. And the soil is the person who hears the message, who's confronted with the message of Christ and his kingdom. And there are two types of soils. There's two types of people. There are those whose hearing is unproductive and then those whose hearing is productive. And the question for you, for me, as we close, is to ask, what type of soil are you? What type of soil are you? I mean, let's go through a list. Are you like the hardened path? Has your heart become hardened to the message of Jesus, to the gospel of the kingdom? Is your heart like the rock-hard, dried-out clay of the desert, a place where seed sown finds no chance of surviving? Is that your heart this morning as you hear the message of the kingdom? Are you like the rocky path? Maybe you remember a time when the message of the gospel was good news. You received it. You were happy. You went forward. It was a Billy Graham crusade. You remember the excitement. But as time has pressed on, your joy, your commitment, your allegiance, maybe it's waned. So that here you find yourself years later, decades later, having been through some trials or some suffering or some persecution, and you look at yourself and there's no signs of joy or allegiance that first marked your reception of the gospel. Is that your heart? Or maybe you're like the thorny ground. Yeah, this gospel makes sense to you. It's something you agree with. Yeah, of course I'm for Jesus. That's a good idea. I think I'll respond. I think I'll follow him. But along with him, there's a dozen other things in your life, other concerns that easily take precedence over Jesus and this message. This world has so much to offer, so many things to pursue, so many things competing for my affections, for my attention. So much to compete with this one aspect. It's just one. It's just my Christian life. It's just my church stuff. I have so much other stuff. Or on the other hand, this world has so much to be worried about. So many uncertainties. Who's going to be the next president? Are we going to ever get a Speaker of the House? What's going on? What's the political landscape? Or the economy is up or it's down? Or I don't know what to do. There's uncertainty. I'm afraid. And before long, our commitment to Christ and the kingdom, it falls off our radar, out of our purview, no longer part of our life. I mean, in all of these cases, be warned. Unproductive fruit, two of the three sowings that fail to describe people who respond positively to the message, these two of the three hear the message with joy and show signs of hope. Be warned. Two of these three unproductive soils have people who respond positively. Yeah, I'm for that. Yeah, I'm with Jesus. Yeah, I go to church. They even hear the message with joy, but their hearing is superficial. Because receiving the kingdom, hearing the message with joy, it's not enough. Faith that is temporary and unproductive is not true faith. And hearing that does not result in productive living is not valid hearing. I mean, I think that's the point here. That's what Jesus is trying to drive home. The call is to effective hearing. It's to productive or fruitful hearing. I was reminded of the children's song. Oh, be careful, little eyes, not what you see, but be careful, little eyes, how you see. Be careful, little ears, how you hear. The call of this parable is the call to listen and to listen to Christ and to see, but to see by looking to Christ. He's the one who came to proclaim the good news. Christ is the one who came to lay down his life to purchase a people to be with him forever. He's the one who came to establish an everlasting city, a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And it's your response to him that makes all the difference in the world. And it's your response to him that determines whether you're on the inside or the outside. And so my prayer is that we would always be fruitful hearers of the word. Let's pray as we close, and then we'll sing in response.